You're listening to Wheelationships.
So last week we talked about how we need to adapt to the social styles of other people. We said at the very beginning of the series, the whole reason why we're learning all these things is so that we can understand ourselves better, so that we can understand other people better, and then with that understanding, more grace can flow, and those annoying people will become less annoying, and will become less annoying to other people as well. So we've got to learn to adapt. And as we said last week, that word, that acronym, ADAPT, stood for this. It was analyze the patterns and characteristics. In other words, watch their behavior. How are they talking? How are they behaving? How do they respond? How do they react? What are some of the things that they seem to hunger for? And when you gather that data, then you can do the next thing, D, which is determine the social styles of others. And then A was assess your own social style and a temperament. Okay, so I think I kind of have them figured out relatively well. I know what I am. So what are some of the things that I'm going to be doing that is going to annoy them because of what flows naturally out of them? And maybe even what are some of the things that they're going to be doing that I need to be a little bit more on my guard for so that I'm not quick to respond because it's something that might annoy me? And again, this was last week. You can go to the podcast and listen there. The next thing we do is plan to accommodate others' needs because it's not all about me. And then treat others as they want to be treated. We've been reading a whole lot of material during this series, and most of them are from Christian authors, but one of them was a secular author. And I thought it was interesting because we as Christians understand the golden rule, what we refer to as the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that statement there, treat others as they want to be treated, he took it a step farther. He actually took the golden rule and he said, never do unto others as you would have them do unto you unless they're the same temperament you are, because that's not what they're looking for. But in reality, that statement, treat others as they want to be treated, means the same thing as the golden rule, because what am I, as I've said before, my analytical, what am I going to be hungering for? What am I going to be wanting? I'm going to want you to treat me by considering my feelings, considering my thoughts, what I'm longing for, what I'm hungry for. To be considering all of those things, the things that I value, and then act accordingly, putting my needs before your own, which is exactly what Christ patterned before us. And that's exactly what doing unto others means, is we're not treating them just the way I want to treat them, but what do they need from me, and then treat them accordingly. Last week we had the scripture verse, Philippians 2, 3 and 4, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others, which is exactly what Christ did. That is a beautiful scripture verse for you to memorize if you haven't already. When we adapt to the social styles, to the temperaments of other people, then we reduce the potential conflict. Part of adapting is recognizing the social styles of other people. So one of the things I thought I'd do this morning, a little kind of a fun thing, is to introduce you to my family and our social styles. So you've got Tim and I, you start with. Ta-da! Now we've talked about us enough in here, so you probably already know. Tim is an amiable. His secondary is analytical. He's got a little bit of driver and very little expressive. That's probably the lowest on his four-person totem pole there. And I'm hoping the way I'm labeling is not going to confuse you. Last week he did, which is really the smarter, better way. The secondary was listed first as the adjective to the primary. I'm just showing our first, what we have strongest and what we have next strongest. And then next is me. I've already told you I'm analytical. I've got hefty amounts of expressive and amiable. A lot of that depends on my circumstances and my situation, who I'm with, which one of those is going to shine more. And then the lowest for me is my driver. Now, it's understandable, since Tim and I both have a good deal of analytical as either primary or secondary. All four of our kids have a good deal of analytical in them, but only one is primary. Only one has her first primary personality trait as analytical, and that's our oldest daughter, Shay. Yeah, she's analytical. Her secondary is amiable. Like her dad, she's got a little bit of driver and probably the least amount is expressive. Now, they say a picture's worth a thousand words. So I'm going to show you a couple pictures and see if you can figure out what Sammy might be, what his temperament might be. Yeah, I'm hearing several. Oh, he's expressive. Yes, he's expressive. He's our expressive child. He's got a lot of amiable and a lot of analytical coming in, a really strong second, which is a good thing because it helps keep that expressive a little more on task and a little more in line. Now, Summer, I've already mentioned her. The week we've talked about raising a driver, Summer is our driver child. And I know those of you that have mentioned in here your drivers, you need to go home and thank your mom and dad. Because raising those strong-willed drivers is not an easy thing to do. It's quite the challenge, especially when they're young. But what I have found that with drivers, and I probably mentioned it when we talked about them, if the parents are consistent when they're little, you will have such a rewarding relationship with them when they hit the teen years. It does not have to be an explosive type of relationship, but it's going to take that consistency to get to that place for it to be real rewarding. But she's a driver. She's got a lot of expressive. She's got a lot of analytical in her. Like the rest of our family, she tends to recharge by being alone, and that's where her analytical kicks in. And then Sawyer, she's our youngest. Now, if you're somebody like Pete and Karen that have known her whole life and kind of have been around her, you automatically know she's probably the easiest of all four of us to identify because she is amiable. We have teased she's probably the poster child for analytical or for amiable because she's just so sweet. She's so kind. She's so easygoing. Just a really sweet, gentle, tender-hearted young lady. But she's amiable, but her secondary is analytical. So that's our family. I've talked to Cagliotti's, I've talked to Vicky, and I know different ones have already kind of done this, tried to sort of identify what their family members are. And not only because it's interesting, but because it really helps you understand their behavior. It helps you figure out what is motivating them to behave the way they are or to react and to respond the way they are. So it helps in those ways. Now, we mentioned last week we were going to provide the big test for you this week. We've been talking about that test since the very beginning. Now, we are not taking any tests in class today, so no matter what papers you get in your hand, don't take your test in class. You need to pay attention, okay? But I've got two tests available for you today. One of them's a little bit shorter. It's got little clusters, I know. It's got little clusters of four words, and you will look at the four and choose the one that is most like you. It's not my favorite. I'm not crazy about it, but it is a lot quicker and easier than the long one, and it does give you, when you're all through, the opportunity to sort of color in your scoring so you get a nice little bar graph kind of thing for you analyticals that love graphs and charts. That's there for you. They are on the back counter right behind John Cole. So as you're going out today, if you want one, pick it up and take it with you. You do not have to take either one of these. You can take them both or you can take one or the other. It doesn't matter. But again, I want to remind you, the purpose of the test is not to tell you who you are. It is just to simply confirm what you've already been discerning with the information that you've been given to help kind of flesh out a better understanding of how you're made up and what things tend to drive you naturally. But that's for you to decide. Now, if you're taking a test like that and you just can't quite decide which one you are, like if they give you four choices like this test does and you're looking at them, you're going, I really just don't understand. I don't know which one is me. Ask somebody. You can ask your spouse. You can ask your adult kids. Ask somebody. Well, I tell you, we've taken a lot of these different temperament tests throughout the years, but especially in the last several weeks in preparing for this class. And Tim had given me a smaller version of the one that's on the back counter back there. And I came to one of the questions, and it had four choices. And I looked at him, and I thought, you know, none of them really feel most like Trudy. The options were argumentative, lighthearted, nonchalant, and adaptable. And I thought, well, I have had to learn to be adaptable because by naturally I really don't like change. Nonchalant and lighthearted, not so much, I don't think, because I feel things deeply. I take things very seriously. I hate to argue, so that can't be it. But I just couldn't figure out. So Tim was sitting in the living room, so I said, which one of these four do you think I am? Argumentative, lighthearted, nonchalant, and adaptable. Typical Tim fashion, he, instead of answering my question, turned around and asked me a question and said, well, what do you think you are? Well, I don't know. I wouldn't have asked you if I already knew that. Argumentative, lighthearted, nonchalant, or adaptable. And he kind of smirked and said, yeah, I'd say argumentative. I said, argumentative? I'm not argumentative. How could you say I'm argumentative? Maybe just a tad. Well, I was certain he was wrong because I kept saying, I hate to argue. Actually, what I found out it is, I don't mind arguing. I just don't want you arguing back. That's really what it is. But I was just sure he was wrong. He could not be right about this. So our three girls were at home. So Shay was first, and I asked her, you know, what would you pick of me? And she, being the smart analytical that she is, she said, I am not even touching that question. My sweet little kind-hearted amiable just put her arm around me, and she said, I love you, Mom. In my memory, I want to say she said, you're not argumentative, but I'm not really sure she said that. But I do remember she said, I love you, Mom. Well, my driver child is standing about 3 feet away from me with this big grin on her face, flashing her dimples, and she said, yeah, I'd have said you're argumentative. Well, of course she would. She argues with everybody. So by this time, I'm feeling just a little wounded because I'm just taken aback by this. So later, Sammy comes home. And Tim's sitting on the sofa, and I'm in the kitchen. Sammy comes home and stands between his dad and I, and is kind of just leaning his elbows against the kitchen counter, and I'm standing behind him. And Tim smiles, and he said, so Sam, and he asks this question, which by this time he's getting way too much enjoyment asking. Says, which of these four things do you think your mom is? And he's just kind of, you know, hanging there real nonchalantly, not a care in the world. And he says, yeah, I'd have said argumentative. Now, what my little happy-go-lucky expressive failed to remember is that I am still standing right behind him. And I am still limber enough to connect my foot to his backside, which is exactly what I did. But I did not argue about it. So you can ask, but just be prepared for the answer because you might not appreciate it. So the long test, I'm going to put you gentlemen to work again if you don't mind. That blue sheet's not supposed to go with you, but try to listen if you can while they're passing out because we've got a lot to fit in this morning. This is what we've been calling the long test, and it is long. We literally took about 4 pages of testing and squished it down onto front and back of 1 sheet of paper. So the print's a little small. I'm sorry about that. But it will take some time to go through it. That's why you're going to do it later when you're at home and you've got some time, if you choose to. You don't have to. But as they're passing that out, let me explain a few things about this test, because this one does need a little bit of explaining. So I'm going to go ahead and start. You'll get your tests. They're almost through the back there. But if you'll notice across the top, they've got all four of the temperaments there. The first 50 traits, there's 100 traits in every list. So if nothing else, you're going to get a really good snapshot of each temperament. The first 50 are the positive qualities in each temperament. The back 50 are the negative qualities in each temperament. The next thing I want you to notice is how you score yourself. You'll see you're going to put a number 1 on things that are mostly like you and a number 2 on things that are always like you. Did everybody get one? Okay. Only, mostly, and always. You are not going to mark any sometimes. You are not going to mark any frequentlies or occasionallys or once in a whiles. Only, mostly, and always. That means about 3/4 of these things are going to be blank. And that's okay. make sure you don't fall into the temptation of checking things that you admire but maybe are not like you, qualities that you wish you were like. About 15 years ago or so, my siblings and I all took this exact test. And my oldest sister tested herself out as amiable. Now, nobody but Shay knows how mind-numbing that score is, because my sister had many, many wonderful qualities that I so greatly admired. But being low-key, relaxed, pleasant, those were not on her list. She was the very strong-willed firstborn who thought, man, my way is the way. I can remember my mom saying the first 2 years of her life, she just spent crying. You know, she was a very hard, hard kid to raise. So she wasn't amiable. The only thing we can think of is that those were qualities she really admired. And maybe the few times in her life where she was able to be relaxed or low-keyed felt really good to her. And so that was something that she remembered. But they were not things that naturally flowed out of her. And they were certainly not things that were there mostly and always. So be careful as you're taking that. Ask for the Lord's discernment. The first 33 qualities on your test there, pretty self-explanatory. You'll see like number 5, expressives, they love a crowd. Amiables love time with a friend. Big difference in those temperaments. Both expressives and amiables are funny. But the difference there, number 8, expressives are loud, funny. Amiables have that wit and that really dry humor, some sarcasm as well. Amiables and analyticals, if you look at number 11, they're both good listeners, but one is a very relaxed, pleasant listener. The other is a real intense listener. The drivers, number 18, you see that word aggressive. That's on the positive side, and it's meant to be a positive. That is in terms of productivity. They're very productive. Right next to it, you see high energy on expressives. That's a loud, noisy. That's just a noisy, busy, not necessarily a productive, busy. Number 33, they're talking about friendships. Expressives have many friends. Amiables have deep friendships. And then analyticals are going to have deep friendships with just a very few people. So there's some differences there. So this is where it starts getting tricky. When you see the instructions coming up next, it says in rows 34 through 50 and 90 through 100, the last 10 on the back side, are words that are in bold to emphasize that they are in two different social styles at the same time. You're going to see a common word in two columns at the same time. If you have this trait, then please try to discern which one of those it's really coming out of. You know, you may see it in both driver and analytical. You know, which one of those, if you can't decide or you think you have it in both, go ahead and check both. That's okay. But try to discern one or the other and where they might be coming from. 34 and 41, the common boldness traits are going to be there in those first two columns, the driver and expressives. They both see the big picture. They're both good leaders. They're both confident. And then the two that are going to be sharing common traits are the amiable and the analytical. Both of those, as you see in 37 and 38, they like to analyze, but for completely different reasons. Amiables like to analyze just for the love of it. Analyticals want to analyze to improve themselves or so they don't make mistakes. God forbid they should make a mistake. And then the next set, 42 through 46, the driver and the analytical, the first and the last columns, will have common bold print identifications there. They're both intense, but a driver is a loud intense, an analytical is a very quiet intense. And then the expressives and the amiables will share those trusting, generous, appreciative qualities. And then the last set on that page, 47 through 50, so the 3 at the bottom and the 1 on the top of the next page, you'll see that the expressives and the analyticals are going to share common traits, and you'll need to determine, is it because I'm more expressive or more analytical? The one I do want to explain there is number 49, apologizes easily. They both do, again, different reasons. Expressives want everybody to be happy, so if it means I have to apologize, I'll apologize just to everybody be happy. Analyticals apologize easily because they assume all the burdens on themselves. It's my fault, I was wrong, they really take on extra burdens on themselves. Now on the second page, not a whole lot to say back there. Remember 90 through 100, you'll have the common traits. The only one I want to mention and highlight is under amiable number 60, because it has that word sucker, and I want to explain what that is. This is on the negative side, so obviously it's not. It is a negative trait. It does not mean somebody that's naive or gullible that's going to fall for some kind of fast-talking sales pitch. What it does mean is someone who puts up with a lot of, and for a lack of a better word, I'm going to say abuses. People that just walk all over them, treat them badly, and they put up with it and put up with it and put up with it. That's what that word sucker there is referring to. And then you've got the totals at the bottom. You may not be able to color in a nice little graph like the other one, but you can still see how much of each one of those characteristic traits that you have there in you. So any questions before we set these aside? Again, you know, you certainly don't have to. It's just there to give you more information if you should want to. Yes, thank you, Vicki. There will be links on our website, like we do with handouts and everything else. There will be links on the website for these tests as well if you want to go back to them at another time. So it's there. All right, back to this morning. Part of adapting, this is going to be your next line on your handout, is understanding what we value and what annoys us. It's about understanding what other people value and what annoys other people. All of the temperaments are going to value some of the same things. I think it's very safe to say we all value honesty. We all value love. We all value respect. But there's going to be some very clear, distinctive priorities that are going to be vastly different from one temperament to another on what they value and what annoys them. I've given you some little charts there. I'm not going to read down every single one of those. That's why I put it on your handout, though, so you'd have it for later. But if you see their analytical, some of the things that they value are accuracy and competence and organization. They especially like quality and efficiency and facts. They thrive on those things. Some of the things that annoy analyticals are aggressiveness, disorganization, or hastiness. They're especially annoyed by shouting or clutter. Analyticals hate clutter. They can't hardly think or function in clutter. Then looking at the driver's side over there, some of the things drivers really appreciate is achievement, responsibility, goals, and independence. They especially love speed and control and productivity. The drivers love productivity. But they're annoyed by indecisiveness or laziness or procrastination, or and annoyed by details and excuses, those things they have a hard time tolerating, those things. Then look at the amiables, those pleasant amiables. They love contribution and compassion, kindness and loyalty. They love peace. So much of what an amiable does is just so that there'll be peace. I just want peace. But as sweet as they are, they've got some annoyances. They hate conflict, impatience, especially people that are impatient with them, harshness, pressure, pushiness, rudeness. And then expressives, they really value excitement and adventure and spontaneity. They love flexibility and enthusiasm and creativity. But they're really, really annoyed by rules, which analyticals love, and structure, formality. They can't stand routine or boredom or details. So you can see with lists like these, the potential for us to annoy one another is great, and it's inevitable, because the things that I value, you're not going to value, and the things that annoy me might not annoy you. I don't understand how in the world anybody can go through life without making lists. And if I've accomplished something that's not on my list, I'm going to write it down just so I can mark it off. You know, I love my list. Otherwise, you know, an expressive, who wants to work with a list? You know, no. So if you know what annoys other styles, then you can modify your behavior so that you can reduce potential conflict. If you know what they value, again, you can modify your behavior so that you're getting along better, so that you're having peace between you. Now, unfortunately, that's not always going to happen, and conflict is going to arise. Each social style has a specific response that they will typically display in the midst of a conflict. what their first initial response is when they feel like their back is against the wall. This is what some of them might look like. Analyticals, initially, when they feel their back is against the wall, they're going to withdraw. They hate conflict. They're going to become less assertive, more controlled over their self, their own self, facially, verbally, everywise, so they can save face and be able to think through a problem. Extremely important for an analytical. They're not going to be a quick thinker emotionally or any other kind of way. They're going to hold their feelings in. They're not going to share them initially. And they're going to be annoyed by others who come on too strong. Those drivers and expressives, they want you to just get it out right here, right now. You know, an analytical can't do that. Drivers, with their back against the wall, they're going to attempt to control the person and the situation. Their tendency will be to impose their feelings and their opinions on the other person in the midst of the conflict. If they feel like they are losing that control, then they will over-control to compensate. Listening to a situation this week, this girl was sharing. And as I was listening to her, I thought, man, she was raised by a driver dad. Because what she perceived to be unloving behavior, overbearing behavior, was really just a driver dad who wasn't being led by the Holy Spirit, who felt in the midst of his lack of control, became overbearing and over-controlling, and they completely misunderstood each other and their motivations behind what was going on there. So it's important to try to be sensitive and understand other people. Amiables. Amiables, when they feel like their back is against the wall, they're going to just give in to avoid the conflict. Nothing will feel to them is worth it. This conflict is not worth it. In fact, they would rather save the relationship, even if it means hurt to them, because it's just not that important. The important thing to remember about these amiables, though, is on the outside, they will look like they're in agreement. They will, out on the outside, they will look like they agree and they're at peace with this. But on the inside, they could very well be growing very resentful and very bitter in the midst of that conflict. Expressives. Initially, they are going to attack in the midst of a conflict. They may use condemnations and put downs to discredit the other person. They have very strong feelings, very strong emotions, and they have no problem whatsoever sharing with you those strong feelings and those strong emotions. We've said expressives are loud when they're happy. Guess what? They're loud when they're mad, too. So when we feel like our backs are against the wall, no matter what our temperament may be, we shift from those positive qualities to those negative qualities. We become less flexible. We become more rigid and as we take our stand. And then that just becomes counterproductive in our relationships. Those analyticals that are usually just precise and systematic, which are good things, they become inflexible and nitpicky, choosing to withdraw so that they can just avoid the issue. Those amiables who are usually so supportive and easygoing, they become permissive and conforming, so they just want to give in the midst of a conflict. Expressives that are usually just enthusiastic and imaginative, they become overbearing and resort to explosive behavior. And as you see, in the midst of a conflict, we're going to shift from those positive things. Our sin nature is always at work, and we're going to begin displaying the more rigid, more inflexible behavior. And when we focus on our own needs, which is what we do in the midst of a conflict, we automatically tend to focus on what we need and what we want. And when we do that, we want to seek relief. Your next blank on your handout. We want to seek relief by manifesting these protective defensive mechanisms, those initial reactions. We're trying to protect ourselves because we want relief from this conflict. Unfortunately, when we do that, it just escalates the tension in the situation. The other person resorts to their back against the wall behavior, and it just becomes this really unproductive, ugly mess, which of course is going to bring us right back to our opening scripture verse in Philippians 2. Don't do things out of selfish ambition. Put others before yourself. Don't look out for your own interests. Remember last week we talked about the fruit of the Spirit. These things need to be constantly growing because what we know we should be doing, we aren't doing, and we do what we don't want to do. Those things that just naturally grow within us that we have to die to self daily. Now, I'm going to go ahead and stop because we're pretty much out of time. We're going to go a little bit more into this next week. What happens if that initial back against the wall behavior I displayed didn't bring me the relief I wanted? Then what do I do? And also, what do we do with those withdrawing analyticals or those explosive expressives? You know, how can we respond so the tension doesn't escalate, the conflict doesn't escalate, and we can and stop it in a healthy way? So that's where we're going next week. Have a great 4th of July. Thank you very much for coming. See you next week.